Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the Empowering Family Caregiver Show on Blog Talk Radio, brought to you by eCareDiary.com. I am Polly Whitehorn, your host for today's show. November is National Caregivers Month, which is founded by the National Family Caregivers Association. In its honor, eCare Diary is devoting each radio show this month to the deeply personal issues affecting caregivers. Today, we are pleased to have Tim Prosch, author of the new book, The Other Talk, A Boomer's Guide to Talking with Your Family About the Rest of Your Life. Throughout his career, Tim has focused his energies and attention on understanding and addressing the needs, wants, and challenges of the baby boom generation for a variety of national and international organizations. Well, Tim, thank you so much for joining us today. We're just delighted that you are a guest, and I've got just a ton of questions to ask you. And
Good to be here, Polly. Thank you. I'm happy to be here, Polly. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, we are so glad, and I know my audience is really going to benefit from what you have to share with them today. Okay, Tim, let me start off by asking you why you've been so interested in baby boomers throughout your career.
Well, what's interesting about this generation is that they seem to take much more initiative than other generations have, and that's really why I ended up writing this book, because I believe that it's my generation, by the way. It really is interested in approaching the whole aging process from a different perspective. And they've done that in other categories that I've worked in, and this is certainly one that I'm very personally involved in as well.
And what are the key things you've learned about baby boomers?
Well, one of the things that we found out was, and I literally did hundreds of interviews with these folks, was really trying to understand their perceptions and their attitudes and their mindset that they bring to, you know, the various decisions in this last chapter of life that I wrote about. And what they say is, I don't want to put my kids through what I just went through with my parents. And I heard that in a number of different ways, they just want to involve their kids in the process and not just ignore it like their own parents did. And so what they're telling me is we have to find a better way to do this. Typically what happens toward the end of your parents' life is that our crisis hits, and then the adult kids are stuck with making all the decisions without having any input from their own parents. And that can really cause a lot of problems, emotional problems with the kids as well as with the parents. And what I've tried to do with this book is to say, rather than wait until the crisis hits, the parents should take the initiative and have this conversation before or while they can still have it.
Well, that's a great theory. Now, let me ask you, I just want to say, first of all, congratulations on your book, The Other Talk. And can you give us a summary of the book and what actually drove you to write it? I mean, I think you went over that just now, but if you could just kind of give us like a broad view of how the book is structured.
Sure. Well, let me maybe address your other question first. What drove me to do this?
Mm-hmm.
Part of it was had to do with all the research that I've done over the last 10 years with boomers. But there's a second part to it. And that really has to do with what happened in 2005. I don't know if you remember the Terri Schiavo case.
Mm-hmm.
But this really captured the attention of the world, and it was just a heartbreaking story. It was a 15-year tug-of-war between Terri's husband and her parents over what she wanted done at the end of her life. And it really was just heart-wrenching. There was three times actually was taken off her feeding tube once in 2001, once in 2003, and once in 2005 before she finally expired. And it was not just a lesson in the need for advanced directives, although that is true, but it also demonstrates how a lack of communication can really destroy a family. And I heard it in my research, and this case certainly brought that into stark reality for me. Another reason I did it was for the last 5 years, I got to see this dynamic up close and personal. For my parents, recently deceased, went through a very rapid decline with late-stage Alzheimer's and MS, and I could tell you that every day was a real challenge. Not just for me, but for my brothers, and just trying to cope with their situation, with them being incommunicado, if you will. Mm-hmm. I guess my final motivation was driven by what I call the boomer's perfect storm. Right now, there's 77 million of us marching into retirement. Today's 65-year-old will live on an average of 18 and a half years and will require much more medical care per capita than any other age group because things just go haywire.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things break and they don't heal very well.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got all this pent-up demand for much more medical care, and unfortunately we are seeing the supply of geriatric doctors and nurses declining, and very mm-hmm. likely that will happen to Medicare funding as well. So I guess the point of those four drivers for me was that the boomers really need, and their kids really need to start preparing. And they need to have this other talk now, and then they need to keep on talking. Mm-hmm. And my hope is that this book will be a catalyst that they can get them there.
Now, let me ask you, why is this book so different from other books on family caregiving?
Well, part of my, when I was researching the whole topic, excuse me, I noticed that there's literally hundreds of books out there designed for the adult children on how to take care of their declining incompetent parents. But there's really nothing out there aimed at the aging parents.
Mm-hmm.
And so it struck me, particularly with the mindset of the boomers, wanting to take the more initiative, that we could, you know, literally, you know, create a book that would, you know, deal from their perspective.
Interesting. Okay, that's really, really, really fascinating. Now, what holds families back from having the other talk, and what are the unintended consequences?
Well, you know, despite some of this brave talk that I mentioned earlier that, you know, I'll never put my kids through what just happened to me, the fact is that most parents never have the other talk. There's data from the National Hospice Foundation that reports 75% of Americans have not made their end-of-life decisions known, either in writing or verbally. On the other side of it, according to a recent AARP study, 70% of adult children have not talked to their parents about issues related to aging. So I asked myself, why do Americans keep their door firmly shut on the other talk? And I think there's a couple reasons for it. First, it's an emotionally challenging subject. For you, the parent, the conversation can be uncomfortable, it can be painful, it can be depressing, even paralyzing, especially when you get to the point about, you know, the physical and mental deterioration that you're going to go through. And, of course, that last sentence, which is the end.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, I think procrastination is a powerful deterrent as well. I heard more than once, I'm not going to involve my kids in the issues surrounding my end of life until the time is right. Well, of course, the time is never right
mm-hmm.
until it's too late, of course.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So when you, the parent, are stricken with dementia or heart attack or fast-moving disease, your kids will most likely pay an emotional price, and one that could last a lifetime. And these could include things like, you know, feeling guilty or inadequate about your decision-making because you don't have any input from your parents. a sense of helplessness in dealing with the cost of geriatric care. In fact, this stat blows me away, but one-third of all bankruptcies in America are a direct result of health care expenses, especially in the last 18 months of life. Now, there's a long-term resentment that could be building up among family members as well when siblings may second-guess decisions that were made, and that can grow into some real problems. I think another emotional barrier to the other talk is the whole notion of role reversal. At the point when you can no longer operate independently, you become the child, you're the parent, and your child becomes the parent. And what happens, seems to me, is it represents a shattering of the relationship that you as a parent have had with your kids since they were born. So, I mean, in essence, you lose the power and control of being the adult, and your kids kind of give up the security and freedom of being the child. This can certainly be very wrenching for a parent, especially if it's driven by a crisis, because role reversal is often forced on the parents with little or no discussion. You have seen this happen many times where a parent will be rushed to the hospital, have a major operation, and then the hospital says, okay, time to get, you have to get mom out of here and put her in a nursing home. And that was never discussed before, but they only have 48 hours to act. But this situation can also be equally tough on the child, because there's very little training and often no warning that it's time to step into the caregiver role. I think about another major occurrence in life, childbirth. And for this situation I'm talking about, there really are no prenatal classes on caregiving issues and techniques. There are no showers to help with the expense of the caregiving responsibility, and there's no parent to turn to for advice or just a shoulder to cry on. So as a result, this whole world of role reversal can be a very dark and lonely place for the adult children. Again, if we go back to the childbirth analogy, with childcare, there's 9 months to prepare. The evolution to term is usually predictable and straightforward. And there's generally a crowding around of family and friends to share in the event. But with parent care, the catalyst is often a sudden or unexpected crisis. And the decline is often unpredictable and full of unpleasant surprises. And there's almost never any crowding around of family and friends to share in the event. So I guess to, maybe just to sum up this question, initially I think the other talk may be uncomfortable for both you and your children, but as you have the first conversation and begin to have some others around the same subject, I think you and your family will begin to realize that, that you are really empowering your kids for something that will have some very far-reaching and ongoing consequences for the rest of their lives. But they really see the other talk not just about the parents passing, but it's also preparing your kids for events that will come up in their lives. I mean, for example, you'll be helping them cope with and successfully handle some of the difficult challenges that lie ahead for all of you. You'll be creating a new dimension to the family relationship that comes from participating in rather than suffering through your last chapter. You'll be teaching them how to prepare for their own last chapter. And you're even finally giving your children a thorough understanding and actual experience for when they sit down with their own kids to have the other talk with them.
That's I just can't emphasize enough how important that is. It just it's a painful situation, but to have all of that in place, it just makes the transition smoother.
Exactly.
Now let
because
me
you
ask
know, you. You know what's going to happen. You may not want to talk about it, but it's many of the issues that you should be talking about now are pretty predictable. But by waiting until a crisis hits, or even after that, you're going to cause a lot of anguish, a lot of pain.
That's true.
Unintentional, that's true. But it's going to happen.
Now, in your book, you talk about the four facts of life. Can you explain that to our audience?
Sure. Well, so far, we've talked about the emotional barriers and the burdens that swirl around this notion of the talk. But in the second half of the book, you asked me about structure earlier. What I tried to do at the beginning of the book, the first half of the book, is kind of lay out the emotional barriers and the burdens and the whole emotional side of this issue. The second half of the book, I really take a very practical approach to what needs to be done and how to organize it and how to delegate it. And I've even included 18 pages of online resources, which, of course, include eCare Diary. And I also have in there a 12-page worksheet template that you can adapt to your own family's need. And to give it a kind of a user-friendly structure, I built the other talk around these four facts of life that you asked about.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first one is financing your uncertain future, if you will. One of the most daunting and, I think, complex challenges that we face as we get older is, how do you manage your money? I mean, when you're saving money for your kid's college, there's a known beginning and end to it, and you pretty much know when it's going to be over. The problem with aging and managing your money is quite simply the end zone, the when, the where, and the how, as well as the associated costs with that, are unknowable. You don't know when you won't need the money anymore. However, what I try to do in the book is increase your odds for success by suggesting a very disciplined approach to the what-if scenarios that could happen. What are your spending priorities? And I suggest doing it by decade. For example, when you're in your 60s, maybe it's time to take a trip to Machu Picchu, climb that mountain. When you're in your 70s, maybe you take a bike trip in Michigan. And in your 80s, take a cruise. In your 90s, it's, you know, extreme bingo. But the point is, you know, spend your money when you think you're able to do certain things. Don't save up your money until you're 95, because you've missed a lot of living if you do it that way. I also try to establish some guidelines for the family, like financial power of attorney and scheduling regular family meetings with your financial advisors. One of the things that often happens is when you're in crisis, your kids don't know who to turn to. They don't know mm-hmm. who your financial advisors are, nor do they understand what your strategy was in developing your whole investment portfolio. The second fact is selecting the most effective living arrangement. Probably no surprise here, but according to an AARP study, 90% of people 65 and over want to live out their days at home. And if that's your choice, I suggest a series of steps that you need to take to ensure that your home is safe and comfortable as you age. Things like putting in ramps, changing the hardware in the bathrooms and in the kitchen, thinking about lighting, and, you know, if you end up in a wheelchair. In fact, one of the things I suggest in the book is rent a wheelchair for a day and roll around your house and see what it would be like, what things you need to change, because that's going to be your new reality at some point. But I also encourage the reader to seriously consider the other options of assisted living and living with your kids, and then dispassionately evaluating the pluses and the minuses of those too. Because for many people, I know my grandmother lived in a house until she was 80, had renters, and she finally decided to get rid of that, and she moved herself into a assisted living home. And I remember her at her 90th birthday, she leaned over to me at dinner and said, "I'm having the best 10 years of my life. You should try it."
That's sweet.
Yeah, it's you know, so for a lot of people, assisted living is a great idea.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And maybe living with your kids is another idea that your family may want to talk about. I would suggest that you ask a lot of questions if you're going to be living with your kids. And remember that if you decide not to, make sure that they understand why, because you could hurt some feelings if you don't.
Mm-hmm.
A third fact is getting the medical care you need. And I, having spent an entire chapter early in the book on this whole challenge of the boomer's perfect storm that I mentioned earlier, I then address how to develop an assertive and a proactive and a thoroughly researched and a well-designed program that your family can follow to ensure that you can get access to the medical care you need. It's going to be a real challenge for our generation, the boomer generation, to get the medical care they need. And what you need to do as a family is begin to prepare yourself to be advocates for medical care. You can't just depend on your GP to fight your battles for you, because that's just not going to happen. And as medical care changes over time, I would suggest that you maybe assign somebody in the family to say, okay, keep an eye on these kinds of things, you know, these medical issues, because it's not going to get handed to you. Mm-hmm. You know, like I say, the boomer's perfect storm, I think, is going to be a very difficult time, and it's really going to be about access or lack thereof.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The fourth fact of life is what I call taking charge at the end of your life. And on the surface, that sounds like ensuring that the decisions will be, at the end of your life, are made the way you want them to be, and that, of course, is true. But I think it's equally important to understand, to go beneath the surface and point out that in most cases it's not about your taking charge. It's about empowering your kids to take charge as you approach your last sentence.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the main reasons to start having the other talk now, because you can begin to talk about those what those things are.
Mm-hmm.
And I do recommend that you have the other talk at least once a year, because things change. You as a parent may change your mind about something, or you say, you know, maybe I do want to fight to the very end, or before I said I didn't. That should be discussed on a regular basis. So the other talk is not a one-time deal.
Mm-hmm.
It's a dynamic process. Your money is probably going to change over time. You need to address that every year. Your feelings about your end-of-life decisions may change, and that everybody should know about that. If you have several children in the family, you may want to assign them, you know, different tasks. You should also recognize that as time goes on and careers change and family structures change, that the ability of certain kids to be involved in what you talked about last year may change.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it's dynamic.
Now, I have a very personal question for you.
Okay.
Have you had the other talk with your family? And just share with our audience, how did it go?
Yes, I have. And it went kind of better than I thought it would, to be honest. So when they first walked in the room, I could tell my daughter and her husband they're pretty uncomfortable about the whole thing. In fact, one of the things that I would even suggest to your listeners, if they want to pursue this is only slightly self-serving, but is to buy the book and give it to your kids before you have the other talk, which is what I did. Because what that seems to do is it takes it away from a confrontation, if you will, by saying, you know, look at the book. Let's talk about the book when we get together. It's kind of almost a third-party issue. And so by doing that, they kind of understand what the structure was. They kind of understand what we're trying to accomplish. Why to do it, and like my daughter's reaction was at the end. I asked them both to write me a little note, and her response was that she had heard about questions she never thought she'd ever need to answer, and she was mostly appreciative of us to have laid out in writing a lot of the things that we talked about, because she said, now I know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And her husband Fernando said, you know, I also appreciate that, but I'm going to take this to my folks and say, I think we ought to do this. I think we ought to have this conversation. So we're due to have this conversation next in January.
Mm-hmm.
And like
mm-hmm.
I say, we are going to do it on an annual basis. And it was a little tough at the beginning. You know, like I say, you're talking about, you're not talking about football here. You're talking about you know, your end of life and a lot of emotions get churned up in that situation. But if you can, you know, one of the things that we do, and it kind of quantifies it, is to literally create a binder with all the information that you need in it. And they were very appreciative of that because within it they had all the facts that they needed to know, all the contact numbers, et cetera. And so it's not like scrambling to figure out, this is what happened to me with my parents. They went down pretty fast. They were alive for 4 or 5 years, but I knew nothing of their finances. I knew nothing of where any of their paperwork was, and it took me literally 6 months to put it all together, including not knowing that they had burial insurance. And which we lost because I didn't know to pay the bill.
Oh, wow.
You know, that's the weird thing about life insurance. If you don't make the claim or make the payment to your life insurance company, they keep it.
Wow.
So that's another reason to share all this stuff with your kids.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, we've just got a few minutes left here, and I would love for our audience to know where they can learn more about you and your book. How can they buy the book? Where can they get it?
Probably the easiest thing to do would be to go to the website, which is www.theothertalk.com. Easy to remember.
Mm-hmm.
And on in that website, you'll see some more stories that are in the book. You'll be able to get a free first chapter if you'd like to do it that way. And you can also buy a book. And the book is a paperback, which you can get at Amazon. And there's actually links right in the website that you could use to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You can also get it as an e-book. It's available as a Kindle, as a Nook, there's an iBook, and there's a couple other ones in there, too. So that's probably the easiest way to do it.
Great, great. So it's really accessible all different types of ways. That's wonderful.
Yeah,
thank you, Tim.
Yeah, that was part of the intent, was to, you know, this is kind of a labor of love. I don't expect to get rich on this book, but I really feel passionately that there is a better way to do this, and I hope... Everybody so far, I mean, there's some pretty nice reviews on the Amazon page. Everybody who's read it so far has been very, very appreciative.
That's great. Well, thank you, Tim. And it's really been a pleasure to have you as our guest today and to share all this valuable information with our audience. And I know that there's going to be a spike in your sales because the information.
Good.
This book is just, it's a jewel. It's a jewel.
Well, I certainly
appreciate
it.
I'd like to thank our audience for tuning in today. And please join us next Tuesday, November the 13th at 2 p.m. Eastern, when Marjorie Pabst will host our caregiver support group called Caregiver Speak. They will discuss romance and the caregiver, a topic rarely discussed but one many of us face. To learn more about eCare Diary and our upcoming shows, please visit www.ecarediary.com under the content section. You can find us also on Facebook, Twitter, and Pinterest. Thanks so much for joining us again. Bye now.